Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Yes, I am a sound scientist. Came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
It's February 23rd, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Todd Stiefel. The Humanist Hour is the official podcast of the American Humanist Association. Humanism is the life stance of being good and ethical without a belief in the supernatural.
Well, Todd, welcome to the show. It's so nice to have a co-host here.
Ah, it's great to be here. This is going to be a lot of fun.
And actually, we're gonna spend the majority of today's show talking all about you. Are you ready to have your dirty laundry aired for our listeners?
I can't wait. That should be fantastic. Actually, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to talking about the free thought movement and humanism and all the exciting things going on.
Definitely. First things first, though, let's talk about some things that have been happening recently, both in and outside of the movement. For example, this past weekend, February 12th, was Darwin Day. Did you have some fun plans? Did you have a good day?
I did. I actually went to a Darwin Day / John Frum Day party that was hosted by the local Triangle Coalition of Reason. It was our official kickoff event. It was a blast, actually.
Now, I have two questions for you. One is John what day now? It's Darwin Day and John Frum?
John Frum. John Frum is essentially it's a cult of the Pacific Islands. And it's an interesting story because it's an example of religion forming in the modern world. It's a new religion. They're not completely sure how it originated, but what happened is these Pacific Islanders were relatively impoverished and not used to seeing wealth and riches or modern technology. And so around the time of World War II, when the US military came in, they saw these people on their radios, and then planes would fly overhead and out of the sky would fall cargo attached to parachutes. And they thought that was awesome. And they wanted cargo too. So they weren't sure how to make this happen. So what they've done is they started emulating the US soldiers.
Really?
And to this day, they still, and it's a small cult, but to this day, they do things like building planes, but out of like palm fronds. And and they dress up like soldiers with jeans, and they go bare-chested and print USA across their chest, and then carry around fake guns and march in formation. It's interesting. So we actually did a joint Darwin Day, John Frum Day event, and had a costume party, and we were at a club and had, I don't know, about 60 people there from different organizations around the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill area. And it was a blast. I went as a John Frum cultist, complete with the USA painted on my bare chest, which is unwise, by the way, in the middle of February. It was a bit brisk.
I'm going to have to see some photographic evidence. I think actually that'd be great artwork for this month's episode.
There are pictures on Facebook of me at this and a bunch of the other people. There were some great costumes. I did not win the costume contest, so that'll go to show you that there was quite a few good costumes. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure my wife and I finished last in the from category, so there was some great stuff. It was a lot of fun, actually. We had a really good time and got some very interesting looks wandering around Chapel Hill afterwards when we
weren't
part of the party and just eating at the Noodle Company or whatever the place was called.
That's awesome.
It was very fun.
Nice.
What'd you do for Darwin Day? Anything in particular?
Well, I didn't necessarily celebrate Charles' birthday. However, I did certainly honor the whole sort of, you know, his theory of evolution, because I prepared for a workshop on barefoot training. And so listeners will remember a few months ago that we played this whole episode interviewing a couple of different evolutionary biologists from Harvard and also from Liberty University about how barefoot running and barefoot training is in fact a humanist topic, because it's tied very closely to human evolution and the evolution of our feet and how we've evolved to become runners. So that's a bit of a stretch, but I would say that I was there in spirit.
That's actually very interesting, and it is directly tied to evolution. I saw, I think it was last week, that they have discovered now that the Lucy fossil actually had arched feet, which are necessary to support upright walking.
Yeah, that's cool.
Very cool. So it pushes back the date of upright walking to, I believe, 3.2 million years ago now, which was much earlier than they had thought. So that's pretty fascinating.
That is.
So you were getting your Lucy on.
Yeah, that's right. I like it.
So right before we got on the air, you were telling me a little bit about a story coming out of London.
That's right. So there's a... There were, I think, this group of four or five men who were trying to break into a jewelry store, I believe, or maybe it was a TV store, but they were breaking into this glass storefront with like baseball bats. And so, you know, they park their motorcycles, they get off, they go across the street, and they start breaking the storefront down. And then, obviously, there's a bystander filming this, because then you see this 60 or 70-year-old woman. This is in London, and she is running. She has the sort of stereotypical like red cloak that comes down to like her calves, and she's running. She got this huge handbag.
A red cloak like Superman?
Yep. No, not cape, but like more like Little Red Riding Hood.
Red Riding Hood. Okay.
Yeah. I think the hood might even be up too. So she comes, you know, running, and I use the term relatively because she's 60 or 70, across the street, and she starts hitting these men who are breaking into this store with baseball bats. She starts hitting them with her huge like handbag. And they stop. They get totally freaked out. They look at her and they start running. They flee the scene.
Did she give chase?
She did. They got on top of their motorcycles, their mopeds, whatever, their scooters, whatever they were. And she chases them and she knocked one guy off of his scooter and they run away. And then after all that, like once the scene had been like declared, you know, safe, thanks to this woman, like six other people come up and they start to, you know, oh, are you okay? And it's like, she just kicked, you know, these guys out. She was amazing. It was inspirational. And on one hand, I would hate to be the guy that was just like, okay, I'm just going to record this. But on the other hand, he probably made her into like some sort of like internet superstar. So,
that's good Samaritans. Fantastic. Can you imagine what those guys were thinking at that point in time? Like a little bit of, this woman's insane. She must know something we don't. Let's run.
That's right. I don't know. I wish I could hear what she was saying to them, you know?
Get off my lawn, sonny.
Anyway, it just goes to show you that there are still some good Samaritans left in this world.
That is fantastic. I love that story. Yeah. I love stories where the good guy wins or stories where crime is thwarted. Those are always fantastic. We'll have to share more of those at some point in time. Maybe we should have a whole show on crimes that are foiled in a comedic way.
Absolutely. There are now movies now about like sort of the everyday person becoming a superhero, right? And fighting crime.
Oh, yes. There's a couple of good ones, actually.
Yeah.
I saw the movie Kick-Ass a few months back. That was great.
That's awesome. So we'll definitely have to devote a show to the everyday superhero. I like it. It's good stuff. And you were telling me about a story that you read also, and you posted on Facebook a link about some not so good news, right?
Well, if you're a Scientologist, it's not such good news. So there was a big article in The New Yorker, which was a full expose, and this goes back to this month, and it was covering a lot of the different challenges in the Church of Scientology and some of their background and some of the kind of nutty things that are part of the quote religion. And apparently some of the things that have been coming out recently have gotten the attention of the FBI. And it was revealed that the FBI has actually been investigating them for a while now. And they're actually looking at potential charges. There's been no charges filed yet, but potential charges of slavery and human trafficking.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. But people weren't surprised on Facebook. I was like, well, I knew Scientology was a little wacky, but slavery and human trafficking, that seemed a little extreme, even for them.
Right.
But yeah, apparently there's a lot of people who've been trying to escape this camp they have out in California. And some of the people who have since left the church have talked about it and said they actually have this center where people work for $50 a week, and do pretty much anything the church wants them to do. And if they leave, the only ways to escape are relatively difficult. And some of the people who have escaped and managed to stay escaped have said that they have to use cars to break through the perimeter and run off. And one of the former heads of security there has since left the church and has said that they were very good at bringing these people back, and that they would go out and talk to them and try to coerce them through psychological means or other means of persuasion. And if that didn't work, they would actually use force and basically kidnap these people and drag them back to this place and then put them back to forced labor.
That's horrible. And what are they doing? What's the labor? Are they making license plates?
Well, one of the specific things that's come out is they've done a lot of different kinds of work, but one of them was they've did remodeling of motorcycles for Tom Cruise. And he got free, allegedly. I mean, it's everything I've said so far is, you know, alleged, but he apparently saw some of the motorcycles of the head of the church and really liked what was done, and ended up having some of these people remodel his motorcycles, and they redid an airplane hangar for him and did some car work and all sorts of different things. And it's just free to the high profile members of the church. So,
wow,
very interesting stuff. Perhaps it's not true, but we'll, if the FBI is involved, it could get very interesting. And apparently they are there. So we'll see if charges get filed or not.
Wow. So that just goes to show you that everyday people might be superheroes, but the people that you see in the movies as superheroes might not be heroes in real life.
That's very true. And to these people who've escaped and are trying to live their lives again, I mean, I guess they're a hero of sorts too.
Yeah,
they're just trying to move on with their lives after being in a cult. It's not easy. Their finances, their resumes are essentially ruined.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that. So Todd, I guess we have our last piece of news, which is probably our biggest news as far as our listeners are concerned, which is that I'm interviewing you today because you are the new official co-host for the Humanist Hour podcast. So Todd, tell me a little bit about yourself. I guess specifically tell me about your connection to the humanist movement.
Well, I've been a humanist for quite a long time, but didn't even realize what a humanist was until a few years ago. And I got very involved about a year and a half ago. I was involved with my family business before then, Stiefel Laboratories, which we sold in the summer of 2009, at which point I had the opportunity to become a full-time activist and volunteer, which I have to admit, I'm extremely fortunate to have that opportunity. Very few people get that.
So you're a full-time free thought activist. What's that exactly?
Essentially, I'm a full-time volunteer. I volunteer my time to a variety of different organizations and provide free consulting in the movement. I also established a foundation that mostly acts as an endowment for the free thought movement and use that to provide donations to a lot of the different organizations that are helping change the world for the better for people like us.
That's pretty phenomenal. So your organization is called the Stiefel Freethought Foundation, right?
Correct.
And what's tell us about some of the things that you believe in. You've got this you've got values listed, and you talk about love and integrity and reason and freedom. And that's interesting. I've never seen love listed as one of the sort of cornerstones of a humanist or a free thought organization. And I got to say, I love it.
You know, that one has interesting inspiration, the love one in particular, because the inspiration is actually Jesus Christ, which seems strange for a humanist. But I was thinking about what is the most appealing to modern Christians. And I think it was very different a long time ago, but to today's Christians, I think one of the messages that resonates the most with them is the concept of, and you've probably heard this many times before, Jesus is love.
I have.
You know, Jesus loves you. And that's a powerful message. I mean, that is very appealing to people. And I got to thinking about it and I was like, no, wait a minute. Why as humanists do we allow other groups, particularly religious groups, to have a monopoly on love when I think we could actually have a better claim on it? we don't have an ethical system that is tied to 1,000-year-old scrolls, essentially, that were found in the deserts. We have modern ethical codes that have learned from the mistakes of the past. We reject slavery. We accept equality for all people. We reject misogyny. And we've learned from those mistakes. And we truly can promote a type of love that nobody following scripture could ever promote. And I think it's something that we could really make a bigger part and should make a bigger part of our movement, because our love is really something that is unconditional and is something that's not tied down to superstitions and various codes that condemn groups that are different from the believers.
Right. And no strings attached.
Absolutely. No strings attached. We can love you if you're a woman. We can love you if you're straight. We can love you if you're gay. It doesn't really matter. We can love people without these kind of hate-filled biases that are at the heart of most religions in various ways.
Another thing that I thought was pretty neat about your foundation is the mission, which is to gain respect for freethinkers, which is not something that you read very often either. Usually it's to promote the philosophy of humanism or to promote atheism. But I really like that you have respect for freethinkers. So can you talk about what your motivation for that was?
Sure, absolutely. I think that it's important to promote humanism and to promote secular values. But that to me is a piece of what we need to accomplish as a movement. I think to me, the main reason that I've gotten into this is because I want the world to be a happier, safer place for people to live in. And in particular, I would like to change the world such that people that don't believe in God or gods can go through life without having to suffer the discrimination of the assumption that they're not ethical people. And that discrimination is very prominent. It's often unspoken, but it's definitively there. And there's very strong data out there that shows that people without a God belief are actually some of the people that are the most discriminated against in all of American society. I think we need to gain respect. I think that in many ways we have equal protection of the law. So this is less of a civil rights movement, but it is a civil equality movement, because we don't have the same level of social equality and respect as I think we should as people. I don't necessarily mind if people, I don't think people need to respect our beliefs, and I don't think we need to respect other people's beliefs. That's just a way of defending beliefs from criticism. But I do think we should be respected as people, and I do think we need to get to the point where people recognize that people who are humanistic or atheistic are just as capable of being ethical as anybody else.
Right, right. And so you've quantified this discrimination against atheists or non-believers from that Gallup poll that you showed.
Right. Yeah. Back in the 80s and 70s, the homosexual category, those are their words, not mine, was below atheists. And due to the phenomenal success of the LGBT movement, they've actually seen pretty enormous gains in that particular poll over time, particularly between the 80s and 90s. And now, since then, they've passed the atheist category, and the atheists are the lowest in the survey that Gallup conducted, where only 45% of people would vote for an atheist just because they're an atheist. More than half of people would vote against them just on that ground. So what's interesting is the question that Gallup asks, which is, if your party nominated a generally well-qualified person for president who happened to be blank, would you vote for that person? And Catholic, Jewish, woman, African-American, those all are in the 90s or high 80s.
Right. I mean,
the lines are in the graph. It's actually hard to tell because they're so clustered on top of each other that it shows there's very, very little bias in society for those groups of people, which is fantastic. It's amazing and great news. But the homosexual line is very low still, but improving. And the atheist line has improved, but we've still got a very long way to go. But I think there's a lot of hope, because where we are today with more than half of people refusing to vote for us just based on the fact that we don't have a God belief is still actually slightly higher than African Americans were back in 1958. So there's a lot of hope here. There have been very successful movements to raise the profile and raise the respect of other minority groups in this country, and we need to do the exact same type things.
Sure. Now, do you think that some of your... This is a big jump, just so you know.
I'm good with that.
All right. Now, do you think that some of your motivation behind love and equality and respect and wanting kids to grow up in a safer world, free of judgment, free of disrespect, free of discrimination, is that due to being a parent, you think?
I think it's a factor, but it wasn't a big factor in my desires here. I think my motivation was really more encompassing to the world as a whole. I was presented with a very, very rare opportunity and something that I feel incredibly fortunate, which is to have the financial stability to dedicate my life to whatever I thought could make the most difference in the world. What could be something that would really help the world and leave a lasting improvement for all of mankind. And I felt like there's still a lot of areas where the world needs improvement, but one that needs the most improvement and one of the groups of people that needs the most help improving are non-theists. And I wanted to dedicate my life to helping them and helping improve their lot in society, but also by helping to promote humanistic values and secular values. I think it does a lot to help undermine the fundamentalists of the world. And one area where I may differ with some of the people in the movement is I really think we need to unite and try to work with people in the church community and religious people of various sorts. I think the people we need to work against is not just churches in general. I think we need to work more against the fundamentalists and the extremists, which are really causing a lot of the dangers and the liberties to be trampled upon. I find most religious people I know are not like that at all. And I think a lot of them can really help us get to be where we need to be. I think that the LGBT movement would never have been as successful as it's been without the help of straight people. And I don't think that the non-theist movement will be successful without the help of theists.
So what you're talking about with sort of creating alliances with the moderately religious groups sounds to me like the new humanism movement, which is what Greg Epstein over at Harvard has been talking about for the last couple of years. Is this the direction that you see the humanist movement working in?
I think it's one of the directions. We've got a variety of different people who have different strategies, and I don't think any of them are necessarily wrong in terms of the people who are more anti-theistic and really focusing on the criticism of religion. I think that's good. We need to criticize religion. I don't think we can just give it a free pass. But my personal approach is going to be trying to walk the balance where, and I know this is going to be hard and it's going to frustrate people sometimes that I would like to be working with, but I would like to work with the moderate religious people and help improve the separation of church and state, because I think it's in their best interest as well as ours,
right,
and to help promote respect and equality for free thinkers while simultaneously really spending some time going after the fundamentalists and some of the crazy things they believe in, exposing those belief systems, as well as going after the Bible itself and other scripture and exposing some of its flaws, which was actually one of the main thrusts of the Consider Humanism campaign that the American Humanist Association ran during the fall of 2010.
Right.
And that was something that my foundation sponsored a good portion of, along with a lot of other really generous donors. And its thrust was to compare and contrast, if you will, the values and the ethics that are found in the Bible versus humanistic values. And what we were trying to show is to Americans in general that these things are in the Bible, but we don't think you really believe them. And I don't think they do. And some of the responses were interesting, with people saying, we don't believe in those things. Like, of course you don't. We don't think you do. We're not accusing you of doing it. What we're saying is some of the fundamentalists do. They actually believe some of this nutty stuff. And yet we let them have undue say and control in our government. And it's really dangerous.
Sure. One of the other things that I really thought was useful as far as the Consider Humanism campaign goes is that it also, like you said, it compared them as well. So these are things that you believe in, and this is something similar that we also believe too. And I think that there's a lot of value in that.
Absolutely. Totally agree. So two other things that might be interesting to talk about are some of the other things I'd like to do, which are specific to leveling the perception of who is ethical, and as well as providing an alternative to religion.
Okay.
I think that to the first one, some of that is educating about the flaws in religious ethics. Some of it is educating about really what our ethics are and teaching what we do believe in. I hear way too often that, you know, atheists and humanists don't believe in anything.
Right.
And yet we do. We do believe in love. We believe in integrity and things of like reason and freedom and truth.
Right.
And compassion. I think in compassion, these are things we very much believe in. I think it's critical for us to help educate people on those things, and so they understand us better. I also think it's really important for us to provide services to the people in the movement. I think a lot of the reasons many people are religious is more for the benefits to them personally than because of supernatural beliefs necessarily. I think that a lot of people are perhaps more deistic in their beliefs and might believe in a creator deity, but not necessarily one that's active in, you know, answering prayers or day-to-day life. But they spend a lot of time in their religion because their churches provide them with so many things. It provides them with inspiration. They can go to services where they hear music and they get community. And they get softball leagues and basketball leagues and a place where there's childcare, and you know, they get an education for their children in terms of ethics. They may not be the best ethics ever, but those things are provided. I think one of the things we need to do a lot more of as a movement is thinking about what kind of services are provided and how are we going to provide them for our people.
Right. How do you build that sense of community?
Right. And it's the need is clearly there. The meetups are popping up all over the country. And I mean, just here in the Triangle in North Carolina, which is not exactly a huge city, there's something like 8 or 9 different non-theistic groups right here. Student groups, parenting groups, activist groups, social groups, right across the board. And what's interesting is a lot of these organizations are popping up more at the local level because of the needs of these individuals. They're not necessarily the result of flag planting by national organizations coming in and saying, you know what, it'd be really good if we had a group representing this national organization here. Let's go try to recruit it and help these things launch. These things are popping up spontaneously on their own at a local level. And I think that just shows the opportunity that's out there and the need that's out there. And I believe we really need to put a lot of resources into that.
So the grassroots movements are just sort of springing up by their needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And those organizations are critical because they do provide the community, but they also expose the rest of the community. I mean, I think it's, if we're going to gain that respect, people need to know we're out there. We need to come out and we need to live openly. I mean, those are expressions right out of the human rights campaign on the LGBT front, but it's a reality. If we're silent or we're hidden, it's very hard for people to get to know us and for people to see that we're fun, loving, approachable people just like anybody else. And I think that by having these groups and being active and having events, more and more people are exposed to us. We also can get involved in community service and do things where people see us out there making a difference to the community, and they'll appreciate it.
I think this is a good shift. As you mentioned, this need that's coming up in the local communities, I think it's a good shift because we've often been accused of being a movement that's based just on philosophy and debate and people talking about whether or not God exists and why we don't believe in it and evolution and things like that. But we're shifting towards being people who want to have community, who want to be active, who want to do volunteer, who want to raise money for disaster, who want to become active and advocate for people who are being discriminated against and fighting for the separation of church and state, things like that. So I think it's a good shift. And so we need to figure out how to meet the needs of the local groups and communities, as you're saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of work being done on it at the national level and at the local level. I just see it as a huge opportunity that we as a movement really need to focus on, because I personally find the conversations about religion very interesting, but I've kind of burned out a little bit on conversations about is there a God or not, because I don't believe it. No one's going to convince me otherwise unless God himself comes down and starts, you know, having a conversation with me, in which case I probably should be checked out professionally first. but if there's a mass sighting and, you know, lightning bolts start getting thrown by a 100-foot dude, okay, then I might be persuaded. But otherwise, the kind of the is there a God or not stuff, it's just one of those things that we all have in common, but I think we need to build more in common, because there's more to us. There's more to humanism than just a secular worldview. It's about liberty. It's about rights. It's about doing what's right for the world and living a good life and learning about ourselves and helping develop our own personal ethical codes and applying them to the world around us.
That's interesting. As you're saying that, I was thinking about I've recently had a couple conversations about the process of coming out as a lesbian with some of my friends. And like, you go through this stage of where being gay is your life in your world, and you have to be so proud of it and you have to tell everyone about it. And then you sort of move beyond that. Like, you burn out from that phase. And then it's just about like re-assimilating and interacting with all sorts of people and thinking about the things that you the values that you share with people who are gay or straight or bisexual, or whatever. And it's funny because we've always said that we should try to model the free thought movement off of the LGBT movement because of its success. And I think that there are even some similarities in the sort of coming out process, if you will, that we can also learn from.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And this isn't to mean offense to anybody, particularly people who identify as atheists, but I see a progression that seems pretty common where people start as theists and then become agnostics, in that they just don't know if there's a God or not, and kind of get in that comfort zone for a while, and then eventually move into full out atheism where they don't believe there's a God. And then move into humanism, where this part of their life, this part of their self-identity, is more than just the lack of belief in God. And that's where I think the humanism piece comes into play. Now, that said, there's lots of people who identify as atheists that have all those things. They just don't call it humanist. So, and that's fine. That's fine. I'm not saying that they're bad people or humanism is better or not. It's just the terminology I'm using to reflect some of what you're saying, where you kind of become an atheist and you don't have this belief, but the main aspect of your self-identity and your worldview is really more of that, you know, that lack of a deity, and you're still finding ways to replace the other aspects of religion that go away with that. And there's many, many of them. And I think we need to do more as a movement to help people replace those other aspects, because you're not just losing this God, because the God was never there. He's not there for the people who believe in religion. So when he's gone, the churches must be providing something that is valuable to these people.
Yeah, I like that. Amen, Todd.
So be it.
All right, Todd. Well, we're going to take just a little bit of a break. And before we do, I just want to mention to our listeners that we've been talking about this idea of increasing awareness in communities about humanism, both for the humanists and atheists that live in those communities, but also just for getting the word out there to the general public. And we're going to be sort of highlighting a nationwide organization that provides services to this nature called United Core. And we're going to speak with someone at the very end of this show, but we're also going to devote next month's entire episode to speaking with the national director, Fred Edwards. He's the national director of United Core. So keep that in mind, and we'll hear more from Todd Stiefel when we come back. Thanks for listening to The Humanist Hour. Okay, listeners, we're back with Todd Stiefel, my new co-host for the Humanist Hour. Todd, last segment we were talking about your ideas for strategy for humanism and where you'd like to see it go and where you'd like to help move it through your foundation. And I remember reading, like, wow, that's really neat how he laid out the strategy on his website. And then I remember that's part of what you did, right, for in your business, working for your family's business, is that you were a lead strategist, right?
I finished my career there as the chief strategy officer. So one of the main things I did over the last few years there is I learned an enormous amount about strategy and helped bring into the company a strategic planning process and helped us build strategic plans at both the corporate level as well as at the functions and each commercial area within the different parts of the world, and then integrated that into the budget and just used it as a great way to reflect on the business and to come up with ways to make ourselves better and stronger. It was fun. I have to say I love being a free thought activist, but I really enjoyed working with my family. We had a blast. We had an amazing team. I was just really lucky. I got to work with my dad. He was in the office right next to mine. My brother was in the office next to that. My mom and my aunt, other family members worked there. And it was a lot of fun. It was very enjoyable. And I learned a lot. And we were lucky enough to be very, very successful in what we did. And it was a blast.
You're coming in as a new co-host for this podcast and thinking about some of the shows that we've done in the past. You know, we've gotten to interview all the new atheists, you know, Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett and
Sam Harris, the other four horsemen.
And Sam Harris, yep, the fourth horseman. That's right. And, you know, we've had Bill Nye, the science guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson and names like that. And can you see ways to take your background in strategic planning and sort of thinking about the show and what direction would you like to see the podcast move in? Who do you want to interview? Who do you want to talk to? What are you excited to do with this show?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I'd really like to do a couple of different things. First, I'd like to continue to bring in big names that are exciting and that are well known, because I think our audience would love to hear from those people. But I'd also like to bring in some people that might not be as well known and might not have big best-selling books, but have brilliant ideas who have really been making a huge difference behind the scenes in the movement. And I think some of those people could be very fascinating to our listeners, even if they're not household names yet. I think this is a great platform to help people spread thoughts and bring new strategies into the movement.
All right. So we've learned a lot about Todd Stiefel as the full-time free thought activist. Let's talk a little bit about Todd Stiefel, the human being. What do you do when you're not being a full-time free thought activist?
Well, I try to spend a lot of time with my family, with my wife and kids, who I love very much. And they're great people to be around and bring me lots of joy. I have a lot of hobbies. I love movies. I love video games. I'm definitely a geek and proud of it. And that's fine. So though I sometimes wonder how the definition geek gets coming back, because it's got these negative connotations, but all the most fun people I've known have been geeks by the way it's defined in common society. I love music. I listen to music constantly whenever I'm in my office doing emails or reading things. I've constantly got music on. I love rock and roll.
Nice.
And I'm actually in in the first band of my life. I started late to actually learning music, and we practice every week and have been slowly but surely getting better and adding music to our repertoire. And I'm by far the worst musician in the band. My bandmates are definitely very patient with me, but we're having fun. We right now have mostly covers that we play, but we're starting to write music, and some of them are coming along really, really well. We've got one really kind of slow bluesy song that is pretty solid that we're done with, and we've got a couple much more upbeat, like hard rock songs that are in the works that we're hoping to have finished soon. Well, the name of the band is Words Such as Burn, which actually came from an IT manual and just seemed like a funny phrase to be stuck in an IT manual. but we have a page on MySpace now. We haven't put a lot on there yet. Most of it's kind of live stuff we've played at like birthday parties. But yeah, we're a basement band at the moment, but moving up quickly. And you know, I think our sound is actually very good, but I'm obviously biased. And we have a variety of genres we're pulling from. We definitely have a large blues influence, a lot of punk influence, hard rock, classic rock, all kind of coming together. So the songs we play are kind of all over the place. So the one original we have done is very dark and brooding and bluesy. And some of these other ones that we've got in the works are going to be really kind of get your hiney moving hard rock dance tunes. And I'm really looking forward to seeing them progress.
And speaking of your love for music, Todd, our listeners a few minutes ago just heard a cover by your band. And the cover was a Black Keys song called I Got Mine. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that?
When we do covers, we don't try to replicate the original song exactly. We just try to use it as inspiration and then give it our own twist to it. So it's a great version, in my opinion. And I'm looking forward to playing it live at the Rock Beyond Belief Festival, which is going to be a blast. You heard about that on last month's show, and we're going to be one of the bands playing there, and we'll be playing that song as well as several originals, and it's going to be really cool.
Well, that's awesome. I can't wait to hear them all. So Todd Stiefel, who is your favorite superhero?
That's a good question. I kind of like Superman. I like how he's got all these cool different powers. I would love to be able to fly, and he seems like he has the largest package of powers. Plus, he's invincible,
right?
Except for the kryptonite, which is really the best power. Like, if being invincible is pretty sweet. You can get shot. You can't get killed. You can do all these wonderful things. It certainly allows you to be pretty courageous if there's few repercussions. And Frank, come on, how common is kryptonite on Earth? have you ever seen kryptonite?
No, I certainly haven't.
See? You see? I don't think any of our listeners have seen kryptonite. So, I mean, this is a tough guy.
Are you a kryptonite skeptic?
I am a kryptonite skeptic. I mean, you think about it. His ship came to Earth. It was specifically targeted here and had navigational systems to get here. This planet's millions of light years away. What are the odds that, you know, whole rocks from that particular planet would make it all the way to Earth without burning up in our atmosphere? I just don't see it. I think it would, you'd get small flakes of dust. It would be disintegrate in the atmosphere. I just don't think you could get enough kryptonite to really stop him.
So the more you talk like this, the more it makes me think that maybe Superman isn't so brave at all. Maybe he's just, you don't have to be that brave if you're invincible.
It's true. I mean, he might be a total wimp. Like, if he was fighting on Krypton itself and he had no powers, he might get his butt whooped left and right, or maybe he'd just run in terror. But then again, if I was invincible on Earth and not on Krypton, I'd spend more time on Earth.
I think so too. So keeping with this theme of music, Todd, if you could take 5 albums with you to a desert island on which you would be stranded for the rest of your life, what would those 5 albums be?
Oh boy. It's the hard part of this is limiting it to just 5.
I understand.
So, all right, I'm not going to give you necessarily my top 5. I'll give you the first 5 that hit my brain. So I would say Weezer's Blue Album.
Okay.
I would go with the Rolling Stones' Sticky Fingers. I would take NoFX's Punk and Drublick.
I got nothing for that one.
I love that title. That's great. What are some other good ones? I might take By the Way by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Love that one.
Okay.
And who else? I might take Carnivus by the Silver Sun Pickups. I've been really digging that album the last few years. It's fantastic.
Nice. I've heard of Weezer and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's it.
You got to check out some of those others. Just great, great rock and roll, good fast guitars, just exciting, get you moving music. Here's something to know about me is I am an optimist would call it empathetic. A pessimist might call it an emotion vampire. I tend to be very influenced by the emotions of the people around me and the music I'm listening to. And so I actually use music as a way to kind of give me energy. And I tend to listen to a lot of very upbeat, energetic music to inspire me and get my motor going.
All right. Sounds good. So you didn't ask me, but I'm going to go ahead and offer my answers anyway. My top five albums, probably. Let's see. Definitely a local indie pop rock band called Circe, their album Revolution. Definitely one of my favorites. Michael Jackson, Thriller.
Ah, classic.
Yeah, hands down. Let's see. Tegan and Sara, probably. Really fond of their album Sainthood, which you might like because they're sort of like 80s punk, but they're out now. Let's see.
By the way, NoFX, who you said you hadn't heard of, actually has a song about Tegan and Sara, which is
really
it's very funny.
Are they making fun of Tegan and Sara?
I think they're just more just making fun of themselves. The song is essentially about not being of having a conversation and finding them really cool, but not being really sure if they were talking to Tegan or Sara
because they're identical twins. Nice. how many did I do? Three.
I think you're at three. Yeah, you got two left. You better make them good.
I'm a pretty big fan of KT Tunstall. I'll say I did the telescope. I like her. It's good stuff. And I'm sure I'd have to bring an Ani DiFranco disc with me. So I'll say Out of Range by Ani DiFranco.
Nice. I'm going to have to check out some of these albums. You're hitting on some stuff I'm not as familiar with.
Nice. See, it's good. It's going to be a good partnership, Todd. I'm excited about this. I hope our listeners are too.
It's going to be really cool. I think that we're going to have a lot of fun. I think our listeners will too. I look forward to bringing a mix of interesting subjects, great interviews, and just a little lighthearted fun to this.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoy getting to know our new co-host, Todd Stiefel. If you want to learn more about Todd, you should visit his website, the StiefelFreeThoughtFoundation.org. That's Stiefel, S-T-I-E-F-E-L, FreeThoughtFoundation.org.
All right. So I'm excited about our next guest, Jess. We're going to be having Steve Raid on the line, who's going to be giving us a little bit of the lowdown on the United Coalition of Reason, which is an organization he founded a couple years back, which works to raise the visibility of local non-theistic groups across the country. It's pretty cool what he's doing.
That's right. And before we air that clip with Steve, I just want to make a connection for listeners who have been sort of tuning in over the past year or so. We've mentioned a couple of different items in the news where there's a bus campaign of ads and different locations where the ads had to come off the bus and they went back on the bus or the billboards had been vandalized. So if those things sound vaguely familiar, that's all part of the media campaign, which is one of the services that United Core provides for their local coalitions. So Todd and I spoke with Steve over the phone earlier this week.
Well, hello, Steve. Thank you for joining us today on the Humanist Hour. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Todd. And hear a lot of great things about you. Keep up the good work.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I'm the person who founded United Core. And I'd say about 3 years ago, when I thought about getting active again. I had been active in the mid-90s in CFI and Council for Secular Humanism. And about 3 years ago, I decided to get active again. I called up the American Humanist Association, asked for the local chapter. They referred me to Joe Fox. We went out, we had dinner. I asked him to tell me about the state and status of secularism in my area here, the Delaware Valley. And pretty much I got a story that there was a bunch of groups, most of whom did not communicate with each other and were each off doing their own thing. So I got the idea of, why can't we create a cohesive group for more power, better recognition in the Philadelphia area? And I asked him to invite all the leaders of local groups to dinner at a local Chinese restaurant, which happened a couple, 3 weeks later. And from that dinner, we decided to get together as a group and create Philly CORE, Philadelphia Coalition of Reason. And we launched it with a billboard campaign on I-95, just as you leave downtown Philadelphia, a very high visibility billboard. And it had a great effect both on membership and awareness in this community. And from that, we decided, well, let's see if there's a way of getting this to go nationwide. We started, you know, with Philly, and now we're in over 30 cities with affiliates, and our intention is to keep growing. In each city, we go out with a billboard, we get the local groups together, we get press, we create a website presence for each local CORE group where they can interact with each other. They have their own dedicated area of our website, unitedcore.org, and they eliminate the need for having local programming because the website is so user-friendly, and they can upload local events and maintain contact with each other within the local region.
Steve, you're the founder of the United Coalition for Reason, and it sounds like the idea for creating this national nonprofit came from your own personal need of wanting to have an idea of the connectivity of the free thought movement in your local area. Is that's fair to say?
It's very fair to say. It's fair to say that when I recognized that there was a lot of fragmentation, really a lot of people ultimately thinking the same thoughts but not talking with each other, I just feel as though this doesn't do the movement in general any good, and we need to get together for strength, for recognition, power. And it's just someone's got to take the bull by the horns and try and make it happen. So that was my goal with United CORE.
And are you happy with what's been happening over the past couple of years with United CORE? It sounds like you guys have had some great accomplishments.
I'm very happy with what we've done. I'm extremely happy that Fred is our leader. He's a guy who speaks terrifically and is very motivational. We've got a lot of recognition around the country. And as far as I'm concerned, it's an initiative we want to keep working at. And in fact, looking to tie up with other secular groups wherever we find them, because ultimately it's all about unity to make this movement go forward.
Now, how many coalitions of reason do you have in the works right now getting close to launching? You said you have 30 at the moment that are already out.
Yeah, we have at least 10 more this year. And
wow.
The truth is we could do more if we had more funding, but, you know, it's step at a time. It is growing, and, you know, Fred's only one person, so we have that limitation.
We're working on a coalition of reason here in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area called the Triangle CORE, and I thought one of the most helpful things was a feature that will be put on the Triangle CORE website of a shared calendar for events, so that we can see what's going on with the different like eight or so groups in the area all in one place and have it linked directly to each of our personal calendars. That'll be a great way for us to be able to keep better track of all the cool things that are happening.
I completely agree. That's a great idea. The more people know what each other and other groups are doing, the more cohesiveness you create. And that and having shared events are the ways to get some unity. And it's all about people wanting to get together socially and philosophically. And this is definitely a good way to do that.
Absolutely. Steve, I just want to thank you for doing all that you've done to support this sort of grassroots connectivity and networking, and also just helping to get our name out there and to get good press for these local organizations. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I feel good about it myself. I think we're doing something that needs to be done for America, for the population in general, and we just need more people to get on board. I'm happy to do my part.
It's really wonderful, Steve, that your vision is providing a great deal of unity to our movement and helping break down some of those barriers of competition that we've seen in years past. And we're really starting to unite and get a single voice out there to the world. And I think that's magnificent. And you've been really instrumental in driving that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I say that there's a moving train, and we in the secular movement have to get into the front car, not be following it. We need to be leading it. And this is one way to do that.
Sounds great. Steve, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
That was Steve Raid, founder of the United Coalition of Reason. Yeah, I think one of the funny things about the United Core ads is they're so benign and they're so non-attacking. They're really just reaching out to other non-theists, but there have been negative reactions to people in the theistic community who feel like they're being attacked. There's actually a cartoon at atheistcartoons.com that I thought was hilarious that I've used in some of my presentations, which has a billboard up that says, "You believe what?" with these cartoon characters laughing all over the ground. And there's a man there saying, "Make it less offensive." And then below, it's got one of their billboards saying, "You can be good without God," with the blue sky and the white clouds. And the guy says, "I said less offensive."
That's funny. That's awesome. I agree with you. It's interesting that just by mentioning the word God, I think that automatically it's going to offend someone. Even if it's just to say, "Hey, we don't believe in God. And if you don't, then you're like us. And that's cool. We're here too. Let's do something," you know?
I think that deep down, people who are potentially insecure with their beliefs or want to push their beliefs on other people are very uncomfortable that people with differing viewpoints even exist. And I think they're able to rationalize better that, oh, well, maybe they believe in God. It's just a different God. Maybe they call that God Allah instead of just God. But when it comes to people who believe kind of radically different than they do and don't believe in a deity at all, I think they see that as very threatening, because perhaps deep down they actually are a little bit skeptical and there's this temptation. I also, you know, I don't know if I've even heard this discussed before, and I'm thinking out loud, which is dangerous, but I wonder if some of this has parallels to the people that speak the loudest against the LGBT community.
Absolutely. Like, there are people who sometimes the worst homophobic offenses are committed by people who are in fact gay, but they can't bring themselves to admit it or to come out. Yeah.
Exactly. I wonder if some of the people who are most offended by these benign billboards are the ones who in their hearts are the most skeptical of their own religion, are having a crisis of faith, and don't allow themselves to become a humanist or an atheist. And therefore, their kind of psychological reaction is to fight back. It'd be interesting to learn more about this, if these are almost atheophobes.
I tell you what, Todd, let's set you up with a sandwich board of these ads and walk coast to coast. And the people who react the most violently toward you, try to engage in a debate with them and see if you can get them to come out of the closet as an atheist. What do you think?
You know, I'm not sure if I'd be good at the proselytizing thing, and I don't know if I want to get shot at either.
I think that's a brilliant idea, Todd. Come on. Do it for the people. Do it for the listeners. You could strap a microphone to your back. We could document the whole thing.
go across the country, try to hunt down humophobes and see if they're really humanists at heart.
That's right. I would be like the person videotaping the 70-something-year-old woman stopping the robbery, and I would document it all. I'd be that person for you.
Should I wear a bulletproof vest?
You know, whatever. The 7-year-old woman, she saw armed robbery happening. She wore a red cloak. You want a bulletproof vest? That's fine. That's fine.
I want to hire her as security detail, actually. You can film. She'll run security. Nobody will suspect her of being a badass.
That's awesome. I like it. Let's do it. And don't forget, next month, tune in. We'll be speaking with Fred Edwards, who is the National Director of United Corps. And he's going to tell you all about the United Coalition of Reason and how you can get involved and all about the wonderful free services that they provide to humanist organizations at a local level.
I'm also really excited about our show in April, where we'll be featuring some of the speakers at the American Humanist Association convention that will be held in Boston.
That's right. It's the 70th anniversary of the American Humanist Association's annual conference. It's being held this April 7th through 10th. So it's going to be amazing. We've got lots of great speakers. We are awarding Rebecca Goldstein as Humanist of the Year.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm planning on being there. Are you going to be there, Jess?
Absolutely, Todd. I think it's going to be actually our first time meeting each other.
I know, right? We've kind of, I don't know, is this considered e-meeting?
I think so.
Yeah, any of you out there who are interested in coming to the AHA 70th Annual Conference to meet people and see great speakers like Richard Dawkins and Steven Pinker, just go to the AmericanHumanist.org website and there'll be lots of information there right on the homepage. And you can sign up and come to the conference and join Jess and I. We'd love to hang out.
So anyway, listeners, stay tuned. Lots of good stuff coming up in the next couple of months. And of course, in the meantime, you can always listen to all of our previous episodes and you can read the show notes from all of our last shows at our website, which is humanistpodcast.org.
Yeah, and we also have a listener comment line that we'd love you to call and give your feedback, give suggestions, give ideas. If you have questions, let us know and we'll be happy to answer them.
That number is 202-618-1371. As Todd said, we would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Todd Stiefel.